Thanks for coming, everybody. My name is Chris Tavares. I'm a PNP alumnus, and I want to thank the PNP folks for still being convinced I know what I'm talking about enough to invite me back for one of these things. It's been a while since I've had a chance to talk. I'm going to do a little bit of a different topic today from what I normally talk about, specifically asynchronous programming. So what is it we're talking about here? Doing something with the CPU we'll have to wait for, but you can't block the UI. Now, I'm not talking about multi-threading. I'm talking about asynchronous on a single thread. Things this include: network I.O., disk I.O., talking to a human. One thing I want to mention not on this list: computation. The CPU is not waiting for a computation to complete. The CPU is actively working on the computation. So the techniques we're going to talk about really do not help if you need to go run a physics model for 15 colliding galaxies every frame. This will not be appropriate. This is a very important topic these days, particularly, you know, Lesh talking about Windows 8. Everything is asynchronous in the UI. You know, in the beginning, there was the command line. You know, you sat there, you typed, and then the computer could go off and think all it wanted. You sat there staring, if you were lucky, at a blank blinking prompt, and then you got an answer back. And then those users wanted to be able to, like, you know, scroll around and, you know, save files without having to wait for the floppy disk to update and all that kind of stuff. So this is actually a kind of programming that's been around for a very long time. Now, I do want to also let people know this is in the client track. So I'm going to be concentrating primarily on the client that just about everybody cares about these days, namely HTML and JavaScript. I will be relating this back to stuff you can do in C Sharp, but all of the examples are in JavaScript, so hopefully this doesn't throw people too much. They're not going to be too heavy. The other thing is that I'm not planning on going into a lot of tutorial, technical depth, kind of here's the function calls sort of reference material. That stuff is very well documented in lots of places. My goal here is to give an overview of the important techniques, gotchas, and approaches you can use to make async programming, well, survivable. All right, so what are we talking? What's basic idea here? Basic technique, hello world. Well, we've got dot, dot, dots. I guess my subtitle is asynchronous, and it'll hopefully complete later. Basic idea, we want to tell the computer, I need you to go do something, and then tell me when you're done. The fundamental approach in JavaScript, you pass it a function callback. Now in JavaScript, by the way, there are two primary ways this is done. I'm only going to be talking about this approach where you're passing a callback function. The other one is that you'll have some object with an event, and then the event fires when the data is ready. I beg you, if you're writing asynchronous APIs, don't use the event model unless your event happens more than once, because events are a pain in the neck to hook up. Okay, so here's the basic system. We're calling setTimeout. SetTimeout waits for a little while. We pass it the function to call when the timeout runs is finished, and then we tell it how long we want to wait. So we run this guy. Hey, we did it. Hey, this async stuff's not that hard after all, is it? All right, we got that. Let's get a little bigger. Classic example. We're simulating a type ahead suggestion. You sit here, you're typing, and you type the first two or three letters, and then we go make a call to a web service, and that web service returns a set of values. Said that, hey, it could be this, could be this, could be this. Now, the first thing we need to do, we need to wait a little bit, because we don't want to be making a request on every keystroke, especially if you got somebody typing 70 words a minute. So we use a set timeout to wait. Then we call our get suggestion service. So set timeout itself has a signature defined by the DOM. For get suggestion and for all the other examples I'm going to be using, this is adopting the Node.js style of callback. The fundamental rule for Node.js is that if you take a function that takes a callback, it's the callback is the last parameter in the parameter list. And the first parameter of your callback is going to be an error object. So if there is an exception, it will go there. If there's no exception, that'll be null or undefined. Okay, so we do set timeout, then we call a get suggestions, which is also asynchronous. Then we take our result and we stick it into a div. run this, we wait a second, oh, we made our request, and boom. We made a request, and these are three things that start with letters B-O. Not too bad, although, you take a look at this. Imagine if that body of that thing was a bit longer. What would it take, how long would it take you to find how long that timeout actually is? It's kind of buried, isn't it? Out of the main flow? One could argue that it's just the nature of the set timeout API, but still, feels a little off, but we got this. We're senior developers. It's async stuff. We can do two things at once. Let's get a little bit bigger. So the current team I am on, one of the things we own are the command line tools for Windows and Azure management. And this is we have both PowerShell commandlets, and we also have a command line that is actually written in Node.js. Reason being that Node.js is actually pretty portable. Runs across a bunch of different platforms, and we have a bunch of JavaScript experience, so it was a good fit. So this is a piece of logic that is similar to something that I had to maintain a couple weeks ago. We're trying to create a website. So first we got to check if the name you gave us is available or not. In order to do that, we have to call the server. When creating a site, you create it in a geographic region. So if you didn't give us a region, we have to find out what the current set of regions are and ask you which one you wanted. Otherwise, if you did give us one, we have to validate it. Then we actually go out and create the site. Now, if the calls were synchronous, this is kind of what the code would look like. This is not the greatest, but you know, pretty common kind of things you have to do, especially when dealing with command line interfaces. Now, I did mention we were doing this in Node.js, right? Even though it's on the command line, Node.js is asynchronous at the core. So we need to write this in an asynchronous style. So this can't be too bad, right? I mean, it's just a couple of ifs, right? Oh, look, there's a scroll bar now. So we make our first call, name available, passing the call back. All right, if it is actually available, we get that is available here in the function callback parameters. We then check, did they give us a region? Then we call get available regions. Oh, that's async, so we need a callback there. Oh, and we need a callback to actually choose. This is actually a function in a library called CommanderJS, which gives you a list and lets you choose.
Chris, please don't tell me this is actually.
This is exaggerated for pedagogical effect. Actually, our code's worse. We accept pull requests, by the way. Then we figure out which one they chose. We then go create the site. Okay, except when they did, okay, we validate that they got the right region. Validation, we need to go back to the server again. Oh, wait, well, then we go create this. Well, there's some repetition here, and oh, there's report result. Okay. Yeah, this gets a little ugly. This gets pretty ugly pretty fast, doesn't it? I would also like to ask you, if you were presented with this code right here, how long do you think it would take you to realize it's actually doing that? That's a long time. Yes, I had to do that. Yeah, I actually came across this quote in one of those little auto-animated things with the two, like, animal characters talking to each other with computer-synthesized voices. I wish I could have find it again, but yeah, I remembered that very quickly. And I've just shown the most basic kinds of composition. I mean, we don't tend to think about composition in terms of just writing code, because that's what code is. Line A, line B, line C, boom, boom, structured programming back from 1968. But there's a bunch of different ways that code can be combined, and when you add async into the mix, you have to start thinking about, how do I do one thing after another? Parallel. Well, this is something new. We could fire off a bunch of things and then wait for them all to complete. Ifs, we just showed. Loops, how do I do a loop over a series of values where I want to do an asynchronous operation on each one? Or conversely, I have a series of asynchronous operations and I want to loop over them and get results back. And then try catch and error handling is a big nasty one. It is possible to do all this by hand, obviously. It is probably not possible to do so while maintaining a healthy blood pressure. So there are approaches that can be used. Now, the first thing I'm sure some of you are thinking is like, oh, this JavaScript cries. Pull out a language that supports threads and get it over with. Well, you know, threads are a way to do async, but they don't actually solve the problem. Speaking to Greg Young yesterday, his suggestion was, well, you only use async at the very top and everything else is thrown on a thread where you block everywhere. That certainly is one approach. You can't use that on the WinRT because there are no blocking versions of any of those operations. Can we say race conditions, boys and girls? Is that something, thread synchronization? Is this something that we've really gained here? And finally, you still need to get back onto the UI thread somehow, which means you have to have some way of handling these async operations. So I've seen three major approaches to helping with this problem. Something that happened primarily in the JavaScript space, from what I see, is there's a bunch of async helper libraries. We'll look at those first. Anybody here not heard of Promises? One or two persons. You heard of Task of T? Yeah. Same thing, actually. It's all concept Promises. They're also called futures. The idea of having an object that represents an async operation. And finally, it's like going back to the get a real language. Well, some languages are growing more explicit support for async. Let's take a look. First up, this is something that I've primarily seen in JavaScript. I haven't seen this style of code in C# yet. I think the reason is that these are three examples. Step, flow, and async, you can find them all out on the web. I'm going to show you an example with the async library because it seems to be the most popular in the JavaScript community. The fundamental idea is this. You have a function that takes a series of functions as parameters. And then it will run those in an async fashion where the actual fashion depends on the function you called. In this case, notice I'm calling async.series. Wrong button. And you pass it an array of functions. The last parameter of each one of those functions is a callback that you have to invoke when your asynchronous step is done. When that happens, then the async library takes over and runs the next step of the series. Okay. And in this case, this series function is going to run this first one, which calling set timeout. Notice what I'm passing to set timeout, that callback function that says, here's what to do when I'm done, is the callback I got passed from async. That tells async, okay, this stage is done. Then we do callback, get suggestion, BO, the characters I started with. Async out is just the div to write some output to. And then we invoke the callback again. Notice the array ends here. This last function is called after everything is done, and it receives as this results parameter array of all the results of each of the steps in the series. So if we run this guy, okay, suggestion services thinking, boom, there's our results. So it's a little bit longer than the raw callback version we looked at before. I think this is actually easier to read, though, because it's pretty explicit where each of the steps are. You see the points where you break to do the async work, and then it all comes back together at the end. And of course, series is not the only choice. There's async.series, there's async.parallel. Does the same thing as series, except it does them all simultaneously. Question?
Where do you get the results from?
The question was, where do I get the results? Is this right here?
Yep.
Okay, so... But why does it keep doing that? Get suggestions passes to the callback that it invokes a parameter, which is the array of suggestions. So get suggestions completed, invoked the callback, passed the results, which show up here. Okay?
So the last one has to call chain has to call, has to know about what method, what the callback is.
Every method in the chain has to know that there's a callback there. Now,
no, has to know about the next one explicitly. Because if this one needs to know that the last one that is called the series is calling the function, they're all unnamed, but the last function that you have in the third, it needs to know about it.
So
about the parameters it's expecting.
Yes. So basically the next one in the chain has to know what the previous one passed to the callback as value, as parameters. Just like if we were in the synchronous version, line 2 has to know what line 1 returned in order to continue processing. Does that make sense? Pretty much. Yeah, the return values get chained through. Okay. Although, thank you for mentioning the idea of chaining. Waterfall is kind of interesting in that, now I mentioned before, series and parallel, they just run everything, and then there's one sort of, you've got like a map step and a reduce step, and the final one gets all the results. Waterfall takes the results of the first one, passes it to the second one. Second results, second one, passes to the third one, results, third one, passes to the fourth one, and so on. Whilst, I just find that one particularly amusing, it's a while loop over asynchronous operations. Of course, they couldn't call it while because that's a reserved word. there's async versions of map, filter, other functional constructs. Async itself has a very comprehensive set of operations over async stuff. So if you're doing JavaScript work, that's something you might want to look at. Okay. So here's our CLI example again. Just as an example, here's what the sync code is. Here's what it looks like using async. Okay, well, we still have the scroll bar. Again, I'm using async waterfall this time because we had very much a do something, then act on the result, then do something, then act on the result. So name available callback. It invokes the callback. Notice the signature of my second callback takes the error, which is the node standard. Is available is the return value from this thing, with Boolean basically. And then it gets another callback. So we check is available, I missed a dot in there. Did they give us a region? If they didn't give us a region, notice I'm starting a second waterfall here. This is how you need to nest operations in these kind of libraries. Question? So Glenn's suggestion was that we want to factor out these inner functions as separate name steps. In larger code, I definitely agree. I kind of wanted to demonstrate the worst of the world. But anyway, so we have a sub operation. And we certainly could have encapsulated this as a separate async operation all of itself, which is, prompt for region. Again, get available regions. I used a different name here, CB, instead of callback, just to keep them straight. Then we choose. Then we set our input.region to the value that was chosen. Now, and then notice here, this is invoking the callback from the outer waterfall, not the inner one. This is telling the outer waterfall, we're done now. Otherwise, we do validation, and we evoke that, boom. Otherwise, say callback false. This is passing the is available flag on. Again, this is async work, and we need to make sure that value, which came from our original async call, gets propagated down through. And then finally, we have the final piece. We actually do the create site, callback. And here we have a final cleanup. And we evoke our final callback, and it's done. So it's a little better, I think. Anyone? at least it's broken up a bit. It's not buried and turned inside out like you'd get with the nested callbacks. So with the callback libraries, I just want to give a few opinions. I think these are really, really good if you've got A, do A, then B, then C, then D, boom, boom. It's a very low overhead. The async is kind of large. I've done a bunch of code with another library called Flow, which is less popular. It hasn't been updated much lately. But it's maybe 102 lines of JavaScript grand total. So it's nice and small and compact, small overhead. None of them require Node. A lot of them are optimized to work well in Node, but Step, Flow, and Async all... Well, this presentation is not running in PowerPoint. I think you probably noticed by now. This is just running in code, Chrome, and web page. So, it integrates really well with existing code that does use a callback style, like Node APIs, for example, because you're just passing callbacks, and the callbacks are written in such a way that... they are what are expected. You see, when you start doing branches or nested pieces, things can get messy. Glenn's suggestion, if you've got a sub-operation like that nested waterfall that I had, it makes a lot of sense to separate that sub-flow out into a separate function. That way you can treat it as a atomic piece. Otherwise, you end up with variables like CB1, CB2, CBNext, oh god, another callback. So there is no real analog to these libraries that I've seen in the .NET world. I think the primary reason for that is that .NET really did not grow a convenient way to pass around anonymous functions. You could do it in .NET 2 with anonymous delegates, but the syntax was kind of ugly. It wasn't until we got lambdas. And at that point, we also got the task. Task of T. So .NET jumped straight to the idea of promises. Now promises are really just another way to represent an asynchronous operation. I'm sure everybody's heard of these, pretty much. They're also known as futures. A promise is an object that represents a value that will be available later. This is pretty much the boilerplate description of a promise, and everybody I've ever seen who've heard this scratch their head and go, what the heck does that mean? The basic idea is when you have an asynchronous operation, you can return something from that asynchronous function, right? What do you return? Well, it's async. You don't have the value yet. Or you might. You don't know. It might throw an error. You don't know. So the idea is you return an object that lets you get that value when it is available. Task of T does exactly this. Promises in JavaScript do exactly this. There is the JavaScript community. I mean, we don't have to worry about standardization in .NET. You know, it's here's what's in the base class library. Go to town. That's it. JavaScript is a bit more Wild West. There's an organization out there called CommonJS. It's a group of interested volunteers, and one of the things they've been working on is specifying what is a promise, because there's async stuff all over the place. So this is a link to something called the Promises A spec. Promises/A is really very simple. A promise is an object which has a method on it called then. That's it. What does then do? You pass then a callback. And when the promise has its value available, the callback will be invoked. That's it. It's simple, straightforward, small, and there are lots of implementations of it out there. If you're coding in Windows 8 in HTML and JavaScript, there's the winjs.promise namespace that implements promises slash a plus a bit. I'll talk about what the pluses are. If you're working in Node or in the browser, there are several other implementations of promises. I'm going to be showing examples using a library called Q, which I really got to commend the author of this library on having something that's very easy to find in Google. But they both implement the promises A spec. So what does a promise look like? So here's our suggestion example again. Okay, queue timeout is a little function I wrote which takes the set timeout and turns it into a queue promise. If people are interested, I can show you the implementation of that. It's about three lines. Notice I get the value from that back. I don't pass a callback to the queue timeout. I don't need to. It returns a promise. I call queue timeout.then. It takes a function. Okay, there's no value returned from timeout. It just says, hey, you happened. So I don't have any parameters here. Then I call getSuggestionsPromise. Here's my text. And again, my my div for outputting some stuff. I call .then again. In this case, I get my results from my getSuggestions service as a parameter to my callback that I pass to then. Ba-dum. Apparently my library has changed. So, not too bad. Pretty straightforward. Now, we're talking about a web service here. Web services are notoriously unreliable. How do we handle errors? Well, let's look at our existing code here. GetSuggestionsFlaky is going to simulate the very common case where the service doesn't come back to you. And we'll run it. What happened? Anybody who does any coding with promises for more than about half an hour is going to be sitting here, going to end up in this head scratching state. Nothing happened. It didn't complete. What happened? What happened was that getSuggestionsFlaky threw an error, but we have no error handling. Now, normally in a synchronous case, what would we do? We'd put try catch, right? Try catch crawls up the stack. What stack are we on as a result of an asynchronous callback? It's somewhere downside the system. There's a core event loop. The stack that we made these calls in is gone, long gone. So we need some way to hook up error handling. Luckily, it's pretty easy. Then actually takes two parameters, or it can. The first parameter is the callback, which occurs when the result when you get a result back. The second one is called an error back in the literature, which is a function which is called when the promise fails. Actually, I'll put it there. So in this case, we will simply qErrorOut.textContent. So we'll just log something. So if I didn't screw that up, let's run this again. So service is thinking. Boom. There's my error message from the service. So we have a pretty reasonable way to handle errors here. Now I have a question for you. I have said promises are values that can be returned, right? Okay, so here's an example. I am taking this promise. I am returning it. Quiz time. When does that promise complete and what value does it give you? Well, of course, it probably completes down here, right? Nope. Doesn't complete here either. Queue timeout returns a promise. Dot then returns a second promise. Okay, what is this anonymous function return? Answer? Undefined. There's no return statement in there anywhere, right? So what happens? Well, we end up with a promise for undefined. And in addition, undefined is a value. This is actually something that's really neat about promises, is promises unify both synchronous values and asynchronous ones. Because you can get a promise for a value that you already have, and then it will just immediately complete. So if I did p.then, that would complete right after the timeout finishes, not after the suggestion service is run. Okay, this is a very, very common error in that we've seen, particularly when we were building Windows 8 apps. And I spend a lot of time helping people through this, and I wanted to bring this up because this is something that's going to get you. You need to make sure to chain these things properly. You need to return the right values. If you're chaining, make sure to return the inner promises back out. Oh, the other thing here. Okay, we've got this error handler. Does this error actually make it back out to this piece so you can handle it higher level? No. It is buried. When working with promises and callbacks, make sure to return return a value from each of your handlers so that you know what you're getting back. I also strongly recommend, if you can, use flat chains rather than nested ones, and I'll demonstrate what that means in a minute. So here is the corrected version of our previous example. The only difference here, I did a return. Get suggestion flaky, we returned this then. Now if we did p dot then, this will complete when get suggestions flaky comes back, rather than just after the timeout comes back. Now in this case, it'll still be undefined just because I haven't actually returned any values, but that's I could have just as easily done, you know. If I had done, for example, return then we would have a promise for the first value that came back from the suggestion service. I prefer this, however. This is an example of a flattened chain. Remember, then returns another promise? So you can chain off the return value from then, not something internal. So we look at queue timeout, then get suggestion promise, then value. And then this also gives us this, because I like to separate my error handlers from my success handlers, my callbacks from my error backs. This lets me do that. You know, if you pass null, then the then will just go, okay, you got nothing for me, but you pass the error handler. The queue library actually has a method called fail, where you just pass the error back. WinJS does not. This has many advantages. One, granted this is personal opinion, but this is a lot easier to read. You can see it's fairly straightforward. It's not marching off to the right of the, desperately marching off to the right margin of your screen, for one thing. Second, it is more maintainable because if you have to add something in the middle, it's a lot easier to just pop out another dot then in the middle. And another piece that's very valuable is that exceptions as well as return values will propagate through an exception through a promise chain. So if I get an exception here, the exception will be passed to the promise that we're calling then on here and get passed here. And if we do further thens, if there's an exception, it will stop execution and we'll just start executing error backs until it finds one. So it makes it much more reliable because it's much easier to hook up an error handler. Of course, we can run this. And if I didn't screw anything up, I guess I screwed something up. It was working 15 minutes ago. Oh, well. You'll know what it sees anyway. Error handling in promises is problematic sometimes. Exceptions get captured. Now, there is actually a very good reason for the behavior we saw earlier where the exception happened and nothing, and just nothing. Reason being is that once you have a promise object, that promise object, you can call dot then on it anytime. Anytime after its existence. So it's not that the exception is swallowed. The exception has been very carefully tucked away inside the state of the promise, so that at some point later, when your code calls dot then and passes an error back, I can immediately go, ha, somebody can handle this error now. In practice, what happens is we sit there going, where'd my exception go? So, best practices for promises. Always make sure there's an error handler in your promise chain. Or, if you're using queue or WinJS, there's a special method called done. What does done do? Done is, well, let's demonstrate. Okay, here, I've got my flaky thing. If I call dot done, here's how you use it. Pretty simple, straightforward. It's kind of obvious. Oh, my chain must be done, right? I'm not going to run this because the behavior would crash my browser, and I really would rather not lose my presentation at this point. What does done do? Most important thing, it ends the chain. Because we do not want to continue going on, calling then on something that we have said is done. The other thing it does, well, if you've got a successful promise, a promise that yields a value, undefined counts in this case. It doesn't do anything. That's fine. We're just done. Here's the piece that's important. If the promise is rejected, if there's an exception, if there's an error, it will do a throw. Now, it will throw to the event loop because you can't put a try-catch because, remember, try-catch is about the stack, and the stack that set this up is long gone. But it will throw out to the main event loop where you at least have a chance of catching this. Window on error, for example. This is an important part of reliability, is making sure the exceptions don't go unnoticed. In the browser, I mean, if you're running with DevTools, then you know you'll get the little, hey, an unhandled exception occurred, and then the browser will continue to stumble on. This is okay for ye old web page. It's probably not so great if you're trying to write a CRM application or something like that. In Windows 8 JavaScript apps, they explicitly change that behavior. An unhandled JavaScript exception in Windows 8 will kill your process. So watch out. Now, if you use done, you at least captured it. I don't know how many people have done any WinJS stuff. Anybody? A couple people? So one thing that has been confusing is, I talk about got to use done, or your exception is going to be handled, going to be swallowed, got to use done. And it's like, well, I didn't use done, and I saw my unhandled exceptions. WinJS has a bunch of heuristics that are built in to attempt to surface exceptions that appear to be destined to go unhandled in promise chains, and the code does a bunch of backflips. It's actually kind of disgusting to guess whether you're going to hook up an error handler to this when it goes into error state. So WinJS can get away in probably about 75% of the cases without using done, and you'll still see your errors now. But I would not recommend it. End your promise chains explicitly. It will make your life easier later, and it will avoid lots of head scratchers. All right. So let's look at this again. Okay, we've seen the synchronous version. How does this look with promises? Okay. Still nested a bit more than I like. Shorter scroll bar. Name available returns a promise now. We call then on it. We check is available. Get available regions. I'm missing a couple semicolons and things. Oh well. This returns a promise. Which we go dot then, return choose, blah, blah, blah. Notice here we've got a then. We're returning. In this case, we're doing a sub-promise chain here because of the if. Again, this would be a case where in real code, it would be a good idea to separate this out into a separate function. So in this case, we're returning the result of this get available regions chain. Get available regions, then choose, then set the region. Otherwise, we return validate region also returns a promise. The return is available. Then we say function is available. We go create our site. So not too bad. Still a bit more work than I want to do in one shot. It's a bit of a head scratcher, but we're okay. I personally, for any kind of complex async work, prefer the promise style. It feels more OO rather than just sort of procedural, like the previous helper values do. One thing you will note about promises is once you get a promise somewhere, you end up needing them everywhere. So this is something that you need to consider before biting off the decision to use promises. Just like once you find a task of T, you find yourself passing around a lot of tasks of T. It's just the nature of the API. Now, the advantage, now, if you're going to have something that's going to be infectious, an object with a method called then on it is probably the least bit, the least harmful infection you're going to get.
Chris, got a question.
Yes.
What about Streamline?
I'm getting there.
All
right. I think the composition models for promises work out better than the ones for the helper, well, certainly work out better than the raw callbacks. You don't have to worry about the what's it called, the wedge of death? Yeah, boom, boom, boom. Nest, 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 nest. And the presence of that promises slash aspec has really been a boon, because different promise libraries often will interoperate because all they care about is that there's a then method on it. Actually, this came into action. I don't know how many know this, but you know, WinJS uses promises for all of the JavaScript async stuff. WinRT, when you do an async call, it returns a promise. The implementations of the WinJS promises and the WinRT promises are completely different. And yet, you can't tell. They are completely interoperable because they share the same promises slash a spec. Now, jQuery has something called deferreds. It has a method called then. The people who wrote deferreds claims that the spec in Promises A was ambiguous, so they implemented it differently than every other project on Earth. So, if you're using jQuery deferreds, jQuery promises, be aware. Here's the difference. Now, I mentioned before, you have a promise, you call .then. .then returns a new promise. And then you call .then, you return a new promise. So you chain them together, right? With jQuery deferred, you get the defer, you call .then. It returns the original deferred. So if you do, you know, deferred dot then dot then dot then dot then, you have not, in fact, created a chain. You have hooked up three handler completion handlers to the same original deferreds. So watch out for that. The equivalent of a promises dash a slash a then in jQuery is actually the pipe method, not the then method. My understanding is in the next version of jQuery, they're going to be fixing this up. But quite honestly, I haven't been paying enough attention to know exactly the details there. I just want you to know about the gotcha. Yeah. Oh, and for those of you who are familiar with Task of T, I don't think anything I've just shown you should have been at all surprising. Task of T is a future. A promise is a future. The future is kind of the academic name for this thing. So a lot of the same caveats apply. It would be nice if this wasn't quite so hard, though, wasn't it? Wouldn't it? we have to look through our code. We have to find all the points that are async, and we have to stop what we're doing. And we have to break it up and put in something that happens after that thing is done. We got to do that for every async point. We got to make sure everything's chained together correctly. This is a complex process, but it turns out this is also an extremely mechanical process. The Lisp guys, you know, I've been saying for years, every step forward in computer science actually moves us one step closer to either Lisp or Smalltalk. This guy's figured this out, you know, back in the 70s. It's something called continuation passing style. I'm not going to go into the theory because they pull out lambda calculus and all that stuff, and I just don't get it. But the basic idea is a continuation is a chunk of is the thing to do next. And it turns out you can actually compute by passing around continuations. And there are a well-known series of transformations to take synchronous code of various sorts and do this continuation passing style transform. Yeah, manual automatic transforms. Oh, if only we had a machine that was tireless and always came up with a deterministic answer, and you know, we didn't have to do it ourselves. Oh, what kind of machine could be that? Hey. Async await in C#4.5 or C#5.NET 4.5. I can't keep track of the version numbers anymore. That's exactly what async await does. Francis mentioned this earlier. What it's doing is it's doing a CPS transformation on your straight line code and generating the appropriate continuations and callbacks and whatnot for you. All you have to do is say, now, the compiler designers wanted to at least keep in your face the fact that things are happening async here, which is why you have to mark methods as async and why you have to put the await keyword in. But once you do that, it kind of looks like a straight path, straight line style. Async await is really cool. I really, really appreciate seeing stuff like that in a mainline language like C#. But we're using, you know, what about JavaScript? Well, there's this really neat project out there called Streamline. There's a whole category of languages. I'm sure, how many people have heard of CoffeeScript? Quite a few. Basically, JavaScript syntax sucks. Here's another language that I think doesn't suck. And we're going to compile it into JavaScript because that's what actually runs. Streamline is basically straight async sucks. Here's an alternate syntax, which is very close to JavaScript, which we then compile into JavaScript. And then that was what actually runs. So Streamline is a compiler, basically. It's written in JavaScript. You can grab it in Node.js. The author of Streamline, Bruno, is his name is? Yeah, I don't remember.
Bruno,
yeah. He used a very, very minimal syntax, basically where you would pass a callback before you put an underscore character. The only problem with that, of course, is there's a really popular library called underscore.js, which gets in the way a little bit. And then Streamline compiler will actually do that CPS transformation for you. As long as your callbacks follow the node style, which just about pretty much everybody is kind of converging on except the W3C. Gee, thanks. So here's what Streamline will do for us. Okay, here's our CLI code again, just so you can see it. Okay, ready? We're going to run Streamline and... Hey. Wait a minute, did anything change? The only difference here... Underscore. This is telling Streamline, hey, this is async. Please go do this async thing and then continue on to the next step when we're done. And it did all the swizzling for you to get the straight async code.
Does that mess up your isDefine call?
That will, actually. Thank you. I cannot run this as written. I needed to do a good deal more hacking than I was willing to do on this HTML page to get Streamline to run automatically. Streamline is a preprocessor. You will need a build step for it. The approach I use when I'm using underscore is I just say double underscore is the underscore library. So it's pretty easy to work around. So what about this approach? This is the future. This is what's going to happen. Async is more and more going to the future. Even Google Go builds asynchronous constructs directly into the language. C#'s got it. I would be shocked if not in ECMAScript 6, but ECMAScript 7, there isn't something along these lines in JavaScript proper. However, and you get code that almost looks like the sync version, which is both a blessing and a curse, because you may forget it's in fact async. Debugging this is a pain in the neck. It's really a pain in the neck because what are you doing? You're running a compiler. You get a problem. What are you debugging? The compiler output, not the original Streamline code. Source maps, as they come online in browser, will make this easier. Console log is your friend. And again, Streamline requires a build step. If you're already doing a build step for CSS minification or whatnot, then that's not that big a deal. But just be aware that it has to happen.
Chris?
Yeah?
On the Streamline build step, though, we did find a way...
Yeah, so there is... If you're running Node, If you're talking about a Node app, then there is a way to get it to JIT compile your Streamline code, but that doesn't really work all that well in the browser. Could you repeat the question, please? So the question was, can you get Streamline to output just JavaScript and look at that? Yes, that is what Streamline outputs, is plain JavaScript. It is not really readable. It's not minified, it's still not readable. It is a mechanical transformation with random variable names that just are unique in the appropriate spots. So, doing all right on time. So I wanted to talk a bit about debugging with async apps in general, with these libraries or not. I think I can sum up this statement for debugging async thus. Yeah, debugging this stuff is really hard. I do not have any magical techniques or answers. This is an open problem, and anybody who can solve it, I know that the guys in the VS Debugger team are desperately working on this. It's hard. The stack traces are the things that we are so used to seeing in order to figure out what went wrong. Stack traces are useless in most of these async situations because the stack that you need to see where you set up the call, that stack's gone. Okay. We need to fall back console log, printf. Logging in general is going to save you because you can then see where you went. Now, it's still not going to be perfect. You got to remember that this is async. You could be doing something, make async call, something fail, and the actual failure was here. So you got to try to correlate the results. That's going to be a little tricky, but it's better than nothing. Swallowed exceptions, watch out for it. This is another big one, single stepping. When you're trying to step through, particularly when you've got a bunch of chained promises, okay, hit F7, boom, boom, oh, it's just skipped, and then it completes. So if you got dot then function, put a breakpoint there, you stop there, hit F5, where's it going to go, or hit F10, where's it going to go? Back to the event loop. You cannot single step through a promise chain. If you've got a long promise chain, put breakpoints on every step in it. It's going to be a pain in the neck, but it's the only way that you are going to be able to follow the actual execution of this series of async steps. The last dot is not a debugging technique particularly, but it will save you. It will save your sanity at least a little. This is something that early versions of the WinRT got very, very wrong. In order to save a file in WinRT in the older versions, you had to async call open the directory, async call check if the file existed, async call open the file for writing, async call create a stream for writing, async call write the file, async call flush, and then async call close. That's a lot of async. And you had to do that every single time you wanted to save a file. We now have a create file call with takes a string, which dumps the whole thing out to disk. For the simple cases, when you're building your stuff, think about async needs to be more coarse-grained, at least until we get async await in all of the languages we're working in. This will result in much less hair pulling, much more readable code. You know, the best promise chains are short, shallow promise chains. And the best way to do that is, like we know, is the standard computer science solution. Another layer of indirection. Put a function there with a well-known, well-defined name, and that will make your code much, much easier to read. Okay, so that's all the content I had prepared. If you want the slides, they'll be on the conference giveaway. Or in addition, this is all on my GitHub account, so feel free to go grab it if you're interested. So I don't know how much longer we've got, but...
We have a couple minutes.
Okay, so I'm open for questions if anyone's interested. Any? Yes? Are any of the features going to be included in TypeScript? That is an excellent question. I would be shocked if Anders is not thinking about that, but I do not have any insight into their product plans. I'm sorry. Okay. Anything else? Question?
So I realize we were talking about the client focus here, but I don't think it's much of a stretch if we look at these callbacks in terms of the machine implementation and maybe threads. We don't know. We don't care. But if we instead get out of the process thread area and map these two machines, all of a sudden we're in the Azure CQRS land.
Potentially.
Same damn pattern.
Yep.
I have to believe that philosophically, I hope this conversation's happening somewhere of one to the other. I mean, this is not, I mean, if you go to that land, this is the same pattern.
Okay, so let's see if I can summarize. Basically, if we step out of a single machine and into the realm of, you know, Windows Azure, cross-machine, CQRS, a lot of these same patterns are going to apply. And I would agree completely. A lot of the reason that this is getting as much play as it has, at least in the JavaScript community, is because of the success of Node.js, which is a server-side technology. And Node is building cross-machine stuff built on this exact same callback style paradigm. Yeah, it's turtles all the way down. question in the back?
Do you have any best practices or ideas for writing around blocking functions that you know are going to be blocking?
Ah, so the question is, do you have any suggestions for writing around functions that are going to block? The only answer I know of to that is to throw it off onto a thread and then have some sort of thread synchronization, which will then come back to you. Actually, I did something where back in the days we were doing a lot of XML work. You had the SACS was a push-based parser, and then we had XML Reader, which was a pull-based parser. And you could build, and people were saying, well, you can build SACS on top of XML Reader, but you can't go the other way around. And so I had to prove them wrong, and I did that by, because the way SACS works is by call. So I actually put a thread in the middle, which culled and blocked, and then until somebody pulled off the value of the thread. So that was an approach that does work. Yeah, you need some kind of support in your environment for either threads or coroutines or fibers or some kind of other asynchrony so that you can put that blocking piece off somewhere else that doesn't actually block it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. Anything else? Question here?
Why is Node so popular? Why are people using Node?
Why is Node so popular? Why are people using it? I can simply express my opinions. Okay. I am a big fan of dynamic languages. JavaScript, while its syntax can be very ugly, actually has some truly elegant semantics, and you can do a lot with a little bit of code. And it's a... And Node has incredibly low barrier to entry. So if you want to sit down and just get something started, and especially if you already know JavaScript, boom, go for it. You can get started, and the community is huge. There's NPM has like 17,000 different packages on it for just a library for just about everything you can name. 20. Oh, it's at 20 now? Yeah. So it's, yeah, pretty much. 1,000 more every time you look. I find it fun. It's easy to get into, and it's pretty performant as well. So I think those factors figure into why Node is so popular. That being said, different strokes for different folks. There are tons of different things. You know, there's everything. There's Node. ASP.NET is an incredibly powerful platform. A lot of people work on it. The Java stack. There's one out there called COBOL on COGS, if you're really into that. I wish I was joking. So, enjoy. Any other questions? Glenn?
Just a quick comment, but on the debugging side, Node.js actually introduced this concept called domains. And domains are really designed to help you debug when you have these async type of applications.
Yeah.
And
across, yeah. So basically the node has, yeah. So for debugging purposes, node has introduced something called domains. Kind of acts like the activation contexts in .NET, some information that you can track across logical threads. Again, that doesn't help you in the browser. Okay, I think, are we done?
We can take a couple questions
more. Okay, any more questions? I don't see any, okay.
Everybody's hungry.
Yeah, go eat, thank you very much.
Yes. Good job, excellent.